Women That Lead presents Our Leading Edge, featuring your host, Jenna Forster, Mastermind Executive Coach, inspiring women to lead with alignment, passion, and purpose through conversations that inspire. Stretch yourself to a new level. Learn, grow, expand. And now, here's your host, Jenna Forster.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Our Leading Edge. Thank you for joining me again today. We are in the lovely month of October for this show. So I hope everyone's enjoying the weather and the fall of however that looks where you live. And today I'm excited because we're actually holding the second show of a two-part series that's covering what I believe to be a universal belief that we find so common, and no matter male or female, race, social status, culture, the background doesn't necessarily matter as much around this belief. There seems to be a common string around the belief of I'm not good enough. And on our last show, I was joined by Greg Stiles, and Greg's going to come back today to finish up this topic with me. And we really spoke about, you know, when will I be good enough? And Greg's going to, in a couple minutes, just add what basic ideas we covered in that when we're talking about, you know, where does that come from? Where does that belief system come from? And how does it show up in our lives? Once we understand that, then we're able to shift, and we're able to shift into a place of being very proactive in the nature of our behavior and actions. And that's really what we're looking for. So this whole concept or belief or habitual belief of I'm not good enough really can become a driving force for many of our behaviors and actions. So let's talk about this, and let's start to take some steps towards moving away from that. But before we do that, I want to introduce Greg. I'm going to just tell you a little bit about him in case you haven't heard him speak. He's been on a number of shows with me because I think he's just a brilliant individual. And I hope you've caught some of those shows. If not, please just look on the homepage there at Bold Radio, and you can take a look at all of the shows that he's done with me. But Greg, he's really classified as a human development specialist. And that is because of the nature of what he does. He works with executives, athletes, professionals, and really anyone that's looking to become the best they can be. And then he takes it a step further, and he's really looking for you not only to embrace yourself and be your best self, but he really wants you to then flip it and share it with the world so that you can have a ripple effect and you can have a positive impact in everyone and everything around you. Greg has a clinical background, which makes him the perfect candidate for these kinds of conversations, as a licensed psychotherapist, and he's been doing this for over 20 years. So he has a very diverse, broad grouping of skills that he brings into everything that he does, whether he's working with an individual or a group. He's also expanded that learning and earned multiple certifications within many areas of the coaching world to cover executive coaching, wellness, lifestyle, and really living a spiritually informed life. So well-rounded individual and well-versed with the wisdom that he can bring. Right now, Greg's currently focused, and he really wants to be involved in bringing the very best of psychology, philosophy, sociology, wisdom traditions, and personal protection or self-defense to women and girls. He brings the information that he has, and he synthesizes it to present it and remind women and girls of their innate power, wisdom, and strength, teaching them the skill of self-protection to enhance their ability to truly contribute to the world. And this is where Greg and I come together so strongly, as we're both big believers in contribution. And when we can contribute to the world at your highest level, and when we can contribute to the world at our highest level, then we're really shifting things. So Greg, he's a proud veteran of the United States Army, and he currently lives in northern Colorado with his beautiful wife, amazing daughter, and an assortment of dogs and cats. So Greg, hello, welcome back, sir.
Hi, Jenna. Thank you so much. Boy, my head was getting so big with that introduction that I forgot how to use my mute button here. So I apologize for the delay in joining you. That's what happens when you start listening to all this good stuff by yourself, I guess.
That's right. So, Greg, I'm really happy to have you back because I I love this part of the two-part series because I'm, as you know, a very proactive person, and I want to have discussions that enable people and give them more capacity to take things like this, which is very, very large, on. And with awareness and some good steps, we can help them to shift. So I'm really happy to have you back, and I really want to continue to indulge in this conversation with you. So I'm going to jump right in here and ask you just briefly, can you just recap a little bit from our last show, which was aired in September 28th, what we covered basically around this whole idea of I'm not good enough and where that may come from and how it can show up?
You bet. You know, just to bring our listeners up to speed, that last show was really around what we were calling the shadow side of leadership. And we talked about some of the tripping points that many leaders experience and how those affect the people around them. And so we talked about Dr. Marshall Goldsmith, who had a fantastic book out entitled What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And some of the material that we talked about is from Dr. Goldsmith's book. And the basic concept is that this idea of not being good enough, it's the pillar, it's the root in many ways of some of these other behaviors that we exhibit in order to make ourselves feel good enough. So, for instance, we talked about, you know, many leaders kind of adopt this winning at all costs attitude, which oftentimes is really unnecessary and damaging. Well, why would you adopt that attitude? Why would you express that out in the world? Well, it's probably because on the inside, you don't feel like you are winning. You feel like you've lost. You feel like a loser. And so you're attempting to right the balance. We are creatures of homeostasis. We are creatures who want balance. We are creatures who really seek comfort. We're not real good with not feeling comfortable and being on the edge. And so when we do not feel good, and usually it's this anxiety that comes up, then we attempt to right the ship. And oftentimes when we right the ship as leaders, it comes at a cost of those around us. So one of those ways was that winning at all costs. Another one was using our sarcasm and wit. We all think we're so funny when we're saying these things. And yet oftentimes sarcasm and wit really only indicates, number one, that you're anxious and that you're probably angry about something. And what happens on the outside with the receivers is that it doesn't make you sound really smart and witty. Oftentimes what it does is it's very destructive to those whom we have communicated to, and it's hurtful and it's demeaning to them. And so again, that is directly tied oftentimes to this concept of really honestly not feeling good enough about yourself, that you don't have to be one up on everybody. So that's where this concept comes from, and that's where we started talking about it, was we're looking at the shadow side and trying to think about, well, okay, if the shadow side is here, where does it come from? And then once we understand where it comes from, what can we do to bring awareness to it so that we don't act unconsciously, so that we don't act just out of habit and subvert many of the positive things that we're trying to do in our lives?
And I love that piece, Greg, about acting subconsciously. And what we mean there is in a robotic nature. So we're not consciously aware of the behaviors and the actions that we're taking. And when we stay in that place and we don't act from our current place, our present place, our current awareness, then we can find ourselves falling back into behavioral patterns that will keep us, A, in the same place. And it also is completely driven by beliefs, by habitual behaviors, by patterns within our lives. And many people, when they're trying to create movement of any form, the first step is to step away from the habitual places. And so when we're talking about a subject matter like being good enough and how that can show up, even in leadership, this, in my perspective, it doesn't matter what role you play. If this belief is present, then it will show up in everything that you do, whether you know it or not. And the times that it doesn't show up is when you're putting a lot of force into keeping it in check. So I love the idea that with awareness, we can start to shift away from it so that it doesn't have to show up anymore. It can be a teacher. It can be a leverage. It can now be part of the power of us. So I like that piece of it and what you were saying, Greg.
Jenna, that's wonderful, and I just want to reiterate what you said because I think it's really important. It's not that it won't arise anymore. It's not that some of these behaviors won't emerge. What's important is that we're aware when they do and that we recognize what they are, and so therefore we can take corrective measures. These patterns and these thought patterns and these belief systems, these are the deep grooves. So if you think about a pristine snow, pristine mountain, no grooves, no marks at all, and you have a cross-country skier come through that pristine snow, and they make a mark. And another one comes through, and they make another one, and they make another one, they make another one, they make another one. And it gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and it gets rutted. That's what these behaviors are. That's what these belief systems are. They're in the ruts of our brains. They're in the ruts of our being. And so it is really important that we recognize that to get out of that rut, not only do we have to begin to create a different track, but you got to get out of that first. You got to jump out and look. And the way that you jump out of that rut and look is just by being continually aware of what the signs are that you're engaging in these behaviors that oftentimes, you're right, are habitual. And again, it's not stopping them. It's just being more aware of them, and then adopting other behaviors. Because oftentimes when we try and stop a behavior, all we're really doing is we're putting all our focus on that behavior and oftentimes behaving in that same manner.
Absolutely. And what one of the things that I noticed about myself with this in my working through just this belief alone is what it allowed me to do was it allowed me to continue to indulge in my victimhood. So it allowed me to be a victim in my life. And if I have a belief that I'm not good enough, and whether I'm aware of that belief or not, it is, for me, it was a way for me to stay in a place of being a victim. Therefore, I didn't actually have to be fully accountable for all of the things in my life. And so the depth of this is so great. And those grooves, like you're speaking about in the snow, they're really powerful. And when we can embrace it and say, okay, this is great, Jenna, that's great. So you've embraced your victimhood. You've allowed a belief system around not being good enough to hold you in a certain place in life, no matter what it is, whether it's financial, relationship, business, whatever it is, there was the same level of capacity coming out of me because of what I believed. And so the validity of this is great in my mind.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. And it's exceptionally powerful. But I don't want to promote this concept that it's so powerful that you can't do anything about it. Because really, what it is, it's stories. It's things that people probably told us. It's experiences and how we have created stories around these experiences. And the beauty of the human mind, the beauty of the human spirit, is that we can always create new stories. We can always create new understandings of our experiences. And our ability to do that allows us then to create different results. So we can always move from the point that you talked about, like you have, and then create new stories about that. And that's what's so much about today is, well, how do you create new stories around these things so that you can begin to move in a different way and then have different interaction with the environment which supports that new way of being.
Mm-hmm. And I love what you just said because I do believe that without recognizing the strength of the belief in myself, I did give it a lot more power, if you will, in my life. Once I recognized it and gave it some awareness, then the power was back to me, and it was now about choice. And that's where we're speaking about, you know, these are stories that we have been told or told ourselves that create this, But the power, if you will, because we're using that word, comes back to us now. Now we have choice. So let's move into that in this conversation. And if we have choice and we can move and we can create new stories, let's walk the audience through how, right? How do we do that? How do we become good enough?
Yes, absolutely. So yes, I mean, the stories initially very likely come from the outside. They come from the environment. They come from family, from parents, from surrounding influences, a culture that have a certain story and want us to think in a certain way. And you know, when we're young, when these things are being inculcated within us, we're young enough where we don't get that we have a choice to either say yes or no, but we're little. And so survival is all about going with the story that is being presented to you. When we get to a certain point, hopefully, you know, after a young adulthood, into our adulthood, sometimes way past our young adulthood and into middle adulthood, we finally begin to have the opportunity to say to ourselves, well, wait a minute. If these are stories, then yes, I can either choose that to be part of my story, or you know what? Hey, I don't need to choose that to be part of my story. So the first part in all of this, and this is going to sound a bit counterintuitive, but this is the first step to increasing awareness. And the first step to increasing any awareness, Jenna, is beginning to quiet your mind. And so it's really a very simple mindfulness practice that you adopt, that you do maybe every day for 5 or 10 minutes a day, where you sit and you notice your thoughts, you allow them to happen, and you relax. Because what happens is that, let's remember, beliefs are then developed into thoughts. Thoughts are energy. And so all that happens is that we're learning a different way, a different relationship with that energy. So the first part of all of this is for the listeners. Find an opportunity to develop some mindfulness, to develop a mindfulness practice. It only takes 10 minutes a day. That will calm much of these thoughts that you have, much of this negative self-chatter. And when you begin to calm that, that allows you to then take that next step that I'll talk about.
Yeah, and I know that there's so much information out there about mindfulness, and I know there's always resistance to it, and especially with the individuals that you and I tend to work with, where the schedule can dictate life, basically. It's really, I love that you started with this step, because if we do not quiet the mind and we do not slow down, you know, stop, look, and listen, then it's very difficult to make movements, because we have to slow the chaos down so that we can get into it. And I love that you started with that first step. So we've slowed down. We're going to take a little bit of time in our day. It only takes 10 minutes to sit and just quiet the mind. So then what do we do, Greg?
Yes. So once you've begun that practice, and again, remember, quieting the mind is not looking at, hey, when I don't feel good enough, when I am feel good enough, it's not about that. It's just quieting the mind. When you get a little bit, have a little bit different relationship with that, those thoughts and with your mind, then what I would suggest is that you do sit down with a piece of paper and a pen, and you begin to write down experiences, events, situations, scenarios when you either feel good enough, feel really good about yourself, feel like you're contributing, there's a very positive sense to who you are, and or the opposite of that. Situations where you're recognizing and you're aware, I don't feel very good right here. I am not comfortable. I don't feel valued. I don't feel as if I'm contributing, etc. And I'd like you to sit down with a piece of paper and write down when you experience those two states. And they really are states. They're states of being. They're states of thought. They're states of feeling. And I want you to begin to unpack those. So you just sit down, you write them down, the two different states, and you begin just in that practice of writing down, that increases your awareness. That brings these states to a higher level of awareness for you, so that you're able to begin to now pick apart and figure out, well, what do I choose to be and what do I choose not to be? So the first step is mindfulness. And mindfulness, again, gets a bad rap. The first step is really training your mind and getting to have a better, more efficient, and more controlled relationship with your mind. The second step is to sit down with a piece of paper and a pen and write down, what are the situations, experiences where I feel good enough? What are the situations, experiences where I don't feel good enough? So that increases your awareness.
And what I love about the direction that you're taking, Greg, is there's so much, in my experience, there's so much resistance to going into the past. And a lot of people will say, hey, that's the past, and I'm not interested in going back there. I want to be able to move forward. And moving forward is a big piece of coaching, right? It's from this day forward. And so I love what you're saying about, we're not asking you to sit down and rehash the experiences from your past. We're asking you to sit down, slowing down, and then taking a look at what's currently around you for the clues that can give you the insight that's necessary.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Yes, this is not psychoanalysis. Psychoanalysis does a wonderful job of taking you all the way back if that's what you want to do. If that's something that you want to do, many people find that helpful. But that's not what this is about. This is about taking the clues from your current environment and your current experiences and beginning to identify. Another way of talking about what we're identifying are the triggers. And they're the triggers that then trigger these habitual behaviors and these habitual feelings. Because remember, what triggers do is they get you back into the rut. They're all connected to the ruts. So what we're trying to do is have you more aware of the triggers, because once you're more aware of the triggers, that's where you put your focus. You put your focus on the triggers. So that's step three. Once you have identified these scenarios, once you are a little more clear about what those triggers might be, for instance, when I am in a meeting and I promote my idea, I feel really good about my idea and I'm psyched about what's going to happen, and my boss says, yeah, but I think that we should do it this way. Or, yeah, but I think a better way of doing it would be my way. It makes me feel less than, and for whatever reason, I just kind of sink right back down in, and I'm not good enough. I shouldn't even be at the table anymore. A trigger there is when somebody, it feels like someone's devaluing what I'm saying. So that's a trigger. But you know what? That doesn't have to do with your boss. That has to do with you. And you get to choose how you respond once you identify what the trigger is. So that's the third step.
I love that, because that goes back to that place of where I mentioned victimhood. And when we aren't aware of our triggers and we don't spend time trying to understand them to a greater degree, then we can stay in that place of, if we stick with the word victimhood, where we are blaming others all the time. It's the boss, or it's the partner, or it's the children, or it's the environment, or whatever it is. We stay in this place of, it's everybody else's. If we just fixed everybody around us, everything would be better, which there's no validity to whatsoever. So I really like that piece is showing up in this conversation. When we're recognizing our own triggers, we are then able to work on ourselves, because it's all coming from us.
Yes, this is all an internal process. And even though it started out as an external process, our internal cosmology, all of the pieces of us, everything that's made up of us, has supported everything that has been communicated to us. So this is our opportunity to move it the other way, to where we begin to get to see. You know, it's almost a newfound adolescence. There's an opportunity here to rebel against some of these concepts and some of these ideas and some of these belief systems that we have been fed for so long. Because it is right to rebel against them. If it is putting us in places where we do not feel good enough, and it's not allowing us to contribute at our highest level, we should rebel against those things. And our way of rebelling against that is calling them into question and deciding to choose what I stand for, what I don't, how I allow things to affect me, how I don't allow things to affect me, how I move through the world, not how the world allows me to move through it.
Mm-hmm. Right. ownership. Okay, what's the next step, Greg?
So once we've done our mind training and we're more aware of the situations, naturally, when we're more aware of the situations, we're going to be a little bit more aware of those triggers. We want to write down the triggers. We don't just want to notice them in our mind. Write down what those triggers are so that you can begin to notice them right on the spot. Once you can do that, what you're going to find out is that associated with those triggers is a whole lot of self-talk. There's going to be a whole lot of brain chatter in there about what's going on. And it's going to always be about you're good, not good enough, you blew it. Once again, dummy, you didn't do the right thing. It's going to be all of this talk that does nothing but reinforce those strong patterns. So once you find that self-talk and that negative self-talk, I want you to come up with what are called refuting ideas, refuting concepts. So in my example with the boss in the meeting, feeling like he shot down my idea, my self-talk would probably go to, well, once again, you blew it. It wasn't good enough. And the way I refute that is, no, ideas are really important, and I really like this idea. He might not see the value of it right now, but eventually he will. Or I did a really good job with this. Maybe I just need to communicate it in a different way. So you bring together a new way of looking at this thought that you have. Thoughts are just energy. You change the energy, and then you act based upon that new thought. So it's taking the triggers, associating them with that negative self-talk, which is always there, and refuting that self-talk with positive self-talk. And quite honestly, usually that positive self-talk is much more rooted in reality than the negative self-talk is.
And the reality piece is what's sticking out for me there is thoughts are powerful. They are more powerful than most of us know and understand. And they really do create our lives. So when we can take that ownership, like we were speaking about a few minutes ago, and choose to think differently about something, that something changes. Because of our lens, right? Our perception lens. We all see things through our own lens. And when we are changing the thought around the self-talk, changing the thought around the situation or the person or the thing, we are shifting the lens like you would shift a lens on a camera. So that what you see is different. Then I love the piece. Then you're now able to take action based on the new lens, which is how we change behaviors and actions, which is how we change everything around us.
Exactly, exactly. And only through us changing our lens will our external change. Our external interactions with our environment will not change unless our internal lens changes first. And what's fascinating, Jenna, to me, is that so often the people don't change outside. The relationships don't always change outside. But how we interact with those people and how we interact with those relationships changes, and that changes the whole dynamic. And so we change, and that changes the whole kettle of fish. So the last step to this four-step process that we've been talking about here, and actually it's going to be five with this last piece, is practice. Just practicing and continuing to do it. Continuing to practice your mind training. Continuing to, when you find yourself in situations where these things come up and you're not feeling good enough, write them down. Continuing to look at the triggers that might be associated with those situations. Continuing to be much more aware of how we talk to ourselves. So many people that I work with will have these conversations about, well, what were you thinking? What were you telling yourself? They're telling themselves things that they would never say to somebody else. Never, ever would they be so negative to someone else. So be aware of how you're interacting with yourself and what you're saying to yourself, and continuing to practice, practice, practice. And if you do that, what Jenna said about changing that lens, that's going to happen. And eventually that lens is going to be the new groove. And that old groove that you had is going to go away.
And I have a very clear direction on this in my mind after hearing you speak, Greg, and I'm going to let you do the last piece of it and then just say how I hear it, which, you know, I'm a very direct and I like things simplified. So, but what I love about what you're saying is the piece that really resonates with me is it's not about changing the people around us. It's about the internal shift within us that will have an effect on everything around us. So really, it was really big for me when I agreed and I made a contract with myself that I would always come back to that. So when I'm feeling pulled outside of myself, or I'm feeling, when I say that, I'm feeling some sort of emotion, anger, frustration, anxiety, agitation, whatever it is, I know that I have now stepped outside of myself. If I can recognize that and take a look at myself and say, okay, well, what's happening, and move away from the blame game of, well, Sally over there did that, then I can do this work like you're speaking about, and Sally over there, the situation changes. You know, you can look at it in so many different facets where either the people you're drawing into your life will no longer be drawn into your life because they don't have alignment with you anymore. It would be one extreme. Another extreme is you shift in such a way that you make different choices. But there's a whole gray area within that, and I think people get shy away from the work of this because they don't want everything around them to change. But I like what you said about it's not about taking action to change everything around you. It's about taking these steps, then taking the action and practicing to change the internal environment and allowing things to unfold as they will outside of you.
Yes. And that is the message for everything that we've talked about up to this point. And I know that's a large message from your show, because that's one of your key philosophies, Jenna, is that it is an inside job. And you know, if you go back thousands of years to all of the philosophies around us, all of the religions, most of them will say, there's one thing that you have control over, and that is your internal experience. Externally, you don't have control over anything. But if you can master your internal experience, you don't need to control the external anymore, because it's okay. It all begins to work out the way it needs to. So, you know, a realistic way of talking about that is your issue with Sally, okay, she may never get to a point externally to where she's validating you the way that you want to. And yet if you've worked on it internally to where you don't need her validation anymore because you understand where you were trying to get that, number one, it doesn't matter whether she validates you or not. Number two, it gives you the opportunity to say, well, do I want to stay in this situation or not? And if I don't, maybe I'll move somewhere else. And there isn't a Sally. Although I'll tell you, most places that we go, there are challenges for us. There are always going to be challenges for us. And so it's really important that we continue to work on ourselves internally to meet whatever challenge comes, because we don't control the challenge. All we always control is how we handle it and how we respond to the challenge.
Yeah, gives me the chills. I love it. So is there anything to add to this process, or did we list everything as you want people to hear?
Well, I wouldn't add too much at this point, because I think that the steps that we talked about today are plenty. And quite honestly, there are enough steps to kind of last a lifetime, because we always have, all of us have these deep-seated beliefs that are just belief systems. And they will arise, and we will work on them, and we will get to a point where we're more comfortable with them. They don't seem to be holding as much power as they did. And then guess what? We reach another life stage, or we have more stresses come in, and we kind of revert back to that. So if if people would just work on the four or five steps that we talked about today and do that consistently with some discipline, they will find that their external is going to change, because that internal lens will be something that is easily changed and is stronger now, because you won't be at the whim of the environment anymore. You will be in control of your internal space, and that will be where your power is. Others won't have power over you anymore.
I love it. So slow down, pay attention. That's the trigger piece. Listen, that's the self-talk piece. Flip that self-talk, change the thoughts, act from that place, practice, and then when it shows up again, repeat. I love it.
Yes.
All right, that's beautiful. Beautiful, Greg. Thank you so much. I think that, I'm all about growth, and I am a big believer that it's an inside job, and everything that I do, I come from that place, and I speak from experience there, not only with clients, but also with myself. So thank you, sir, for being with me once more and for finishing up this conversation. I think it's a really powerful conversation. Can you let the listeners know how they can get in touch with you if they have any questions, comments, or looking for your services in any way?
Absolutely, Jenna. As always, thank you so much for allowing me to be here. I am always available via email at greg@gregstyles.com. So greg@gregstyles.com. And I'd love to be contacted, and I'd love to interact with folks. So if anybody has any questions, comments, if you don't agree, I love disagreement too, because then that opens opportunities for conversation. So any kind of interaction is great. And Jenna, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And I look forward to seeing you next time.
Sounds great. So for all of the listeners, join me next time, October 26th, as I am joined by Laura McCafferty, and we discuss something called the anatomy of care. And it's not just about care, folks. This is really about leadership. So have a great rest of your day. Thank you for joining me, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Jenna on today's program, Women That Lead, Our Leading Edge. For more information regarding today's show or on any of the programs Women That Lead offers, please visit www.womenthatlead.com. Until next time, lead with alignment, passion, and purpose.